Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, fellow Greyhawkians. It is Wily Hobbit coming to you with another episode of Greycast. I'm going to go a little bit left of center today, a little bit of a different direction, as my esteemed co-host, Mateus, is, as he says, out of spoons. I'd like to congratulate he and his bride on welcoming their fifth child into the world recently, little Sophia. And as such, poor dad is really kind of out of spoons, as he says. So I'm going to fly solo on this episode. And so we'll obviously, you know, experience quite a dip in quality. But, you know, Mateus will be rejoining us as soon as his spoons are replenished. So, again, we'd like to congratulate Matt and his wife and their family with the addition of Sophia. So welcome, Sophia, to the Greycast family. And today we're going to dive back into the regional lore game. And one area that I'm particularly interested in and fond of and have been learning quite a bit about through reading and through playing in that area is the United Kingdom of Alyssa. And so we're going to spend a little time talking about Alyssa and its history. And if you know anything at all about Greyhawk, of course, it really is the history of the Great Kingdom. You know, it started off as a big, huge, I mean geographic and importance part of the Great Kingdom. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So let's first talk about its current kind of status. What is the Kingdom of Alyssa? Where is it? I like to refer to the maps of Anna Meyer. You can find her work. If you just Google Anna B. Meyer, Greyhawk Maps, you can find her stuff. But she creates and produces some incredible cartography for the world of Greyhawk. And so I always like to just give her a little shout out. If you're not familiar with her work, you should become familiar with her work. Her maps are incredible. So thank you to Anna and all that she does. Her maps are always free to download and use. So I always like to kind of make reference to Anna whenever I'm talking geography, because that's my go-to resource. So the area encompassed by the United Kingdom of Alyssa is in the southeastern Flaness. It's between the North Kingdom and the Kingdom of Sundi on, again, the southeastern part of the greater Flaness. And it is rich in history, and boy, if you're a DM, it is a great opportunity for a campaign. Boy, there's a lot to do there, and we'll dig into that a little bit. So again, the United Kingdom of Alyssa, the current ruler, and by current, I'm talking the mid to late 590s. The current ruler, his transcendent imperial majesty, over King Zavener I, the Grand Prince of Kalstrand, and the crowned head of House Darman. And he is a, according to records and things, he's a rogue. Interesting story with this, not only Zavener and his rise to power, but the history of Alyssa, and that's what we're going to dive into. Nice timing for this because it is a feudal empire. So we just had an episode recently on Greycast discussing kind of the principles of feudalism and how it was used in Greyhawk. And Alyssa is a great example of the feudal system as it is structured exactly that way. So they say in my resources I typically go to for this are like Living Greyhawk, LGG, right? Living Greyhawk Gazetteer is probably my favorite go-to for details and facts. And so it's got hereditary rulership. the feudal, total feudal empire. But it's a group of smaller political organizations, mainly principalities, they refer to them, that are governed by monarchs in each of these principalities that are typically aligned with the houses of like major noble houses. And then written agreements sort of tie the whole thing together. The current capital of Alyssa is Kalstrand. A number of major cities make up this huge expanse of territory in the, again, the southeastern Flaness. There's eight principalities, one grand principality, a number of what they refer to as marchlands, and then some smaller noble fiefdoms, counties, duchies, and baronies. So again, there's all of our terminology, our political organization from the feudal episode that we just went through. It's an incredibly rich, resource-rich part of the Flaness. So, you know, any and all manner of crops, foodstuffs, livestock. There's, you know, the ability to, with what they can grow there, they can create cloth and linens and materials. A fair amount of precious metals from the various regions of Alyssa. So copper, silver, gold, iron, in fact, plenty of timber. Two great forests make up part of Alyssa, with a couple of smaller other forests. The Grandwood over towards the coast, the eastern coast of the Flaness along the Solnor Ocean, and then the huge Edry Forest to the north are the two primary forests, the Bonewood and the to the south down near Sundy. There's another forest that we'll talk about as we get into this. So again, precious metals, timber is huge, herbs, there's distilling, ales, beers, brewing, and then it says here also like historical and magical knowledge. So that there are places within Alyssa, cities and so forth, where there's been great use and study of magic that have come from there. So pretty interesting with that. As far as the population, over 3 million, almost 4 million folks call the United Kingdom of Alyssa home. 80% or so, 79% humans, primarily Oridian, Sewell, some Flan, and we'll get into that, you know, kind of how that happened. A fair number of halflings, about 9% of the population, halflings, some elves, dwarves, gnomes, half-elves, half-orcs, and orcs make up the larger groups of races that inhabit the United Kingdom of Alyssa. As such, then, languages that are typical, of course, common, Old Oridian, Orc, Halfling, Elven, probably some Dwarven as well. Alignments all across the board, anywhere from lawful good to create chaotic evil to lawful evil, depending on the area, the city, the region. You see a number of different religions, although one of the primary influential deities, Zilkus. Alyssa is currently really kind of built on trade and mercantilism, if you will. And so Zilkus and those worshipers play a large role in sort of restoring Alyssa to a thriving economy. But there are pockets, especially to the north, where Hextor was worshipped. We'll get into a little bit of that. A lot of the Oridian agricultural gods, the first peoples to inhabit this area in great numbers, were the Oridians as they made their way eastward from the Twin Cataclysms. So a lot of Oridian agricultural gods are worshipped. Zerbo, Ferlangan, Oladamara, Kord, Norebo, Ralishaz, Procan, an entire orc pantheon and halfling pantheon are there. The numbers are such that there are enough, you know, of those demihumans to have established churches to their pantheons. Other deities, Bacab, Wejas, Deleb, Cyril, numerous goblinoid gods, and a, you know, number of the elven pantheon as well are worshipped there. Interestingly, they list these kind of categories, ways to describe countries or realms, allies. What allies does Alyssa have? And it says none, which I think is interesting. And you'll see why as we kind of dip into the history here. It's not one of the more well-trusted entities, probably mostly just because of its history of war and civil war and revolution and violence and instability. And we'll get into why that is. But there are some enemies that that Alyssa unites, the provinces unite to fend off or battle with, and that would be the Scarlet Brotherhood, which if you're aware of geography, on the western end of the southeastern peninsula of Faerun there, or not Faerun, excuse me, the Flaness, I flipped into a whole different realm there, sorry. The peninsula that is home to the Scarlet Brotherhood is a neighbor of Alyssa, so they have no end of issues with them. The North Kingdom, are all the three main enemies. But it says here Alyssa is gravely distrusted by most other countries, mostly because of their schism or their split from the Great Kingdom. And for one reason or another, the Rene absolutely hate Alyssa. Not sure why, but they do not travel there. So interesting from that perspective. So just a quick overview of its current organization. What is it? The official title, the United Kingdom of Alyssa, and it's kind of the remainder, what's left of the central and southern territories or regions that once comprised the huge Great Kingdom. From its, most prolific time, the Great Kingdom was, across the Flaness from the Solnar Coast all the way over to the False Gap, and then from the Azure Sea in the south all the way to the Icy Sea. So huge, huge empire. But of course, over time, wars of independence and various conflicts have broken apart and split apart the Great Kingdom into its current components, and the United Kingdom of Alyssa is one of those components. It's typically now referred to often as the New Kingdom of Alyssa, or simply just Alyssa, which goes back to a name of an ancient Flan realm that the Erdi had defeated to gain all these lands. So currently most of the territory is between the former South Province of the Great Kingdom and the Grandwood Forest. Some of it goes up the west side of the Adri Forest, so that province of Inspa, right beside on the west side of the Adri, is actually part of the United Kingdom of Alyssa, the northernmost kind of a peninsula there created by its border with Wamthum and Almor, and then the east side, the Adri Forest. All the way south, past Sundi, it extends down through the hollow highlands that make up the western border of Sundi, and makes its way southward along the Azure Sea. So the west side, southwest side of the United Kingdom of Alyssa, primarily the Principality of Nairi, is kind of the southernmost end of the empire here. The Menowood Forest is kind of the southern border where it butts into the vast swamp south of Sundi. The Scarlet Brotherhood are to the west of this area on a peninsula near the Free State of Anwal. They kind of control that coast. And then further south into the Tilvano, or is it Tilvanot? Tilvano Peninsula is where the Scarlet Brotherhood has their primary strongholds, down by the Spine Ridge, south of the vast swamp. So that vast swamp actually provides a nice sort of a geographic boundary that keeps the Scarlet Brotherhood from, tracking northward in any great numbers, albeit they prefer to do their work, in smaller groups, as I'm sure you know. So the challenge now, the current state of affairs in Alyssa, is that it's really trying to reconstruct itself, stabilize itself. Over King Zavanner of House Darman is the current ruler, and most folks Just really want this whole situation to stabilize, to get an economy reestablished. You know, back in when it was part of the Great Kingdom, this was kind of the preeminent economy of the Flaness, this territory that the Airdi had taken and become part of the Great Kingdom. But because of all the war and the splits and the schisms and conflicts, those economies have been shattered. And so, you know, the current mandate, if you will, over King Zavanir is to just stabilize, stay out of conflicts, stay out of wars, keep the borders secure and safe as best as you can, and reestablish trade between the provinces and also outside of the kingdom of Alyssa. Back in the day, the kingdom capital used to be known as the Malachite Throne. But that refers to a time that was a very dark time in the history of the region, and we'll get into that. And so they've sort of abandoned that. It's a bit of a vulgar use term anymore. Now it's all about the Royal Guild of Merchants, the economy, trying to get trade reestablished throughout this region. And House Darman and over King Zavanir, they are heading that up, and the priesthood of Zilkus is a big part of that that effort and how things are being run. There exists a black market beneath the economy, dealing mostly in healing herbs, medicines, of course, weapons, clothing, livestock, things of that nature. But one of the things Zavanir has done to try and tighten everything, organize everything, pull the provinces together, is to rebuild the structure of the nobility in Alyssa. So the houses, the various noble houses, have in the past had much top heaviness to them, with princes and monarchs and the like. And of course that just leads to, you know, this land is my land and your land is my land type of things. And so things have been kind of tied together now based around the economy and written agreements that have been brokered by House Darman and over King Zavanir, for the purpose of peace, calm, stability, and then the control of territory, taxes, and merchant traffic is much less contentious when the personalities at the top of these houses aren't given so much power and influence. And so that has been the primary means by which Zavanir has been able to hold the thing together and maintain peace. So just to give you a quick rundown, the major political organizations within the Kingdom of Alyssa, I'm just going to go through these in alphabetical order as they're listed in the LGG. So the Adri Forest, the Marchland of the Adri Forest, the capital there is Inspa, and there's a prince from House Nalax installed there. The Principality of Alyssa, there's a prince also, House Nalax, installed there. The Marchland of Chathold, which is in the western edge along the Azure Sea, that is a marquis from House Crandon, who leads that principality. And all these principalities are loyal to House Darman and over King Zavanir. The Marchland of the Grandwood Forest, the capital there being Torich, Princess Beersheba of House Darman. Inspa has its own principality. Princess Karasin of House Garasteth is in power there. The Principality of Jalpa, another House Darman installation there, Prince Farland. And then the capital principality of Calstrand, and that's the city also. The imperial capital is there. And of course, as I mentioned, over King Zavanir I of House Darman. The Marchland of Medigea, many of you know that formerly as the Sea of Medigea. That is, Nulbish is actually the capital of that land. And it will be eventually moved to the city of Pontilver, which is down on the coast, the southern coast. But there is an undead problem there that they're working to clear and rebuild that city. Neri, the Principality of Neri, is on the western shore of the Azure Sea, kind of between Sundi and the Hollow Highlands. The kingdom there is the capital of the kingdom, your Principality of Neri is Neri. Prince Barjan of House Hax is in power there. And then we have the Principality of Nulbish. Prince Harnod of House Darman. So you see a number of these principalities are headed up by nobility or royalty from the overall ruling house of House Darman. The Marchland of Rauxis, which was at one point one of the original capitals or one of the early capitals of the in the Great Kingdom. So the Marchland of Rauxis, the capital city there, Carnafand, and they're going to be further splitting that into smaller provinces. But Baron Oswaldon of House Crandon is the current administrative caretaker until they get that broken down into some smaller provinces. Reldevin, the Principality of Reldevin of House Crandon again. Prince Carwind is in charge there, the capital, Reldevin. And the Principality of Torich, seat of power there is Torich. Prince Dilweg, again, of House Darman. Excuse me, and that's the final of the major principalities. And again, there are numerous little fiefdoms and counties and baronies all scattered throughout. But it's really a collection of smaller kingdoms that have all been knit together for the purpose of trade, mercantilism, and peace. The history goes back a long time. So let's talk about that. And before I go into that, one thing I did not mention, I always think it's kind of interesting to look at, is what is the coin of this area? And so it's all Aridi in origin. The coppers are called commons. The pennies, silvers are pennies. The electrums are nobles. The golds are crowns. And the platinum are nightingales. So similar terminology to, you know, the, again, Aridi, the Great Kingdom. So let's talk a little bit about history. History here is long and deep. And again, of course, it was started as part of the Great Kingdom. So it literally shares history with the Great Kingdom. Over 12 centuries ago, again, the Aridians wandered and were driven to the east with all of these conflicts that, you know, kind of had their zenith in the Twin Cataclysms. So these people came east and found folks similar to them with regard to the kind of their culture, their social structure in the Flan, both groups being highly superstitious, pretty rustic, quite proud, and fairly primitive when you compare them to the more maybe civilized, developed empires of the Sul and the Baclunish. The Aerdi were probably among the most proud and warlike and therefore dominant in many parts of this region. Aerdi comes from the Old Tongue, which means sky people. These clans worshipped powers of the Orth and sky. So, you know, they would read signs from the heavens or from the earth as portents of things to come in the future. So the Baclunish and the Siluese empires, you know, with their clash, you know, we're decimating Central Auric. The Aerdi, other Aridians decided we need to go east and get out of here, and thus began the Great Migrations, who entered the Flaness through the Falls Gap, which is, of course, where they first encountered the Flan. The Aerdi migrated straight across all over the Flaness, all the way across to the Solnor Ocean on the eastern edge of the continent. The Aerdi named it the Solnor Ocean, which means birthplace of the sun. Knowing what we know about where the sun rises in the east, I'm assuming that's what they meant by that. It would rise over that vast ocean. So the houses, the tracts of land that were settled out there along the Solnor were the original noble houses of the Aerdi. And this goes back to Garisdeth, which were known for their kind of their mysticism, more religious, maybe magical. The Crandon House, and you recognize these names, right? These noble houses of the current principalities go all the way back to the original Aerdi tribes. And then the mercantile Darman House were one of the tribes who, noble houses who settled lands in the east. The Rax and the Nalax also. So you see that they, all of these current nobility principalities are descended from the original tribes of the Aerdi The Iridians who came east to escape the Sewell and Baclunish uproar. These little principalities struggled, of course, like you would assume when they were on their own, until they sort of gathered under one banner, and it was House Garisteth, and this goes back to -216 CY. The scion of House Garisteth, a Lord Mykar, for whom I believe the river must be named, the river Mykar River, which flows. Okay, let me find that now. Got to zoom in. These maps are tremendous that Anna makes. You can zoom right into pretty deep level of detail. So the Mykar River actually flows, forms part of the border of the current free and independent city of Verlastra, southeast edge of the Grandwood Forest. From the Lone Heath, and flows southwesterly down into the bay down there where Pontilver currently is, the western edge of the marchland of the Medigea. And so this Lord Mykar became the first Grand Prince, think of it as a king, and he ruled the land, what is now called the Kingdom of Erdi, Air meaning sky, in the old Oridian. The Erdi made their capital in Relastra, so the earliest capital for this region or kingdom, Relastra. They began to expand and conquer the Flann and the Sewell, driving them away and to the south. And so the other Erdi tribes who were arriving, who were fleeing the far west, came into the region and kind of tagged up with Lord Mykar and the Oridians who were here, and began to just expand and build and grow outward into until they began to cover this entire southeastern area of the Flanness. They conquered the original Flann kingdom of Alissa and swept north and kind of linked up with the other Oridian tribes and just pinched the Flann right out of rulership in the region. So this whole area became the Great Kingdom somewhere along the lines of about -109 CY. The key event there would be when the Erdi of the Rax area defeated the Nirondese in looking at LGG here in the Battle of a Fortnight's Length, and that's about the time the Great Kingdom began. House Crandon took a rather large role in leading from this point on. They just kind of helped pull the power structure of the various houses together, and the Great Kingdom became a major player, a force for good and for law in the Flanness. In the year 1 CY, Grand Prince Nasron declared universal peace and took the title of Overking, very great ruler, and so the Great Kingdom was off on its way. The challenge with all the various noble houses in Erdi, though, the power was consolidated in all of the rulers of Rauxis, and the fortunes of the Great Kingdom really were tied up in that area. And so that's when the city and the region of Rauxis was sort of the center of government. And this is where the term the Malachite Throne was born. Nasron founded the See of Medigea back in the day, granted it to the Fultons, the faith of the deity Fultus. And the challenge here, there was so much land that was gathered by all of these various Iridian noble houses and tribes, it became difficult to rule. And so the Overkings, as time went on, because they tried to rule it from Rauxis. And again, if you look on Anna's map, Rauxis is sort of central to the current United Kingdom of Alissa. It's actually north of Torich. You'll see the marchland of Rauxis, and between the Grandwood and the Adri Forest is where the city of Rauxis lies, the old Great Kingdom, the seat of power. And in fact, it is said that the Grandwood Forest and the Adri Forest actually were across the Flanmi River from one another. But because of farming and clearing away the lands you see today on the map, that a lot of open, fertile ground once, you know, war-torn and pretty desolate, now starting to come back as fertile ground separates the Grandwood and the Adri Forest. The borders of the Great Kingdom, by this time, were at 100 CY. They had split up the areas into major provinces and appointed viceroys to rule over these major provinces. There were four of them spread around the whole region, because by this time it stretches, the Great Kingdom stretches from the Falls Gap all the way over to the Solnor Ocean. And so it's this mammoth, massive, this includes Greyhawk, the lands surrounding near Div, Nirond, Ernst, all of this is wrapped up in the Great Kingdom. House Rax continues to rule, into, the second century CY. But the death of, let me get my cursor moved here, the Overking, Jirannin in 213, started this period of time where succession became something that was less transparent than it had been. Let's put it that way. His son did not want to be Overking, and so apparently his son Melev auctioned off the monarchy to the highest bidder among his family. And so this cousin Zelkor kind of magically appears and becomes the Overking in Rauxis. And what happened as the king is being, as coronation is taking place, an ominous sign appears in the sky over Rauxis, a complete eclipse of the midday sun. And so, of course, the royal astrologers are, the wailing and gnashing of teeth and clutching of pearls, a great portent. This age of great sorrow is coming. And this had been prophesied some 15 years earlier. And so, of course, this king on his coronation can't have that. So he abolishes all the astrologers for trying to create hysteria and sends them all down to Relastra. But the prophecies, apparently there was something to them, because this period of decline came upon the Great Kingdom, driven mainly by inept leadership and rulers, succession after succession. Provinces began to leave the Great Kingdom. Ferrond in 254 CY took off. Overking Portillon couldn't even keep his cousin, the Viceroy of Nirond, from breaking away from the Malachite throne. So Nirond became its own place. And from there, it just went crazy. There was even an assassination when the last Rax heir, Naleth, was assassinated by, brigands from House Nalax. And so in that gap of power, in that what they call the turmoil between crowns, this is 437 CY, the great prince of the North Province, Ivid I, lays claim to the Malachite throne. And so the Herzog of the South Province, this is a Galsonnen of House Crandon, broke with Rauxis to pull together a rebellion in the South. And so civil war is joined between the forces of Ivid to the north, the Herzog, Ivid I, and the forces to the south that broke with and went with House Crandon. The compromise that calmed all of this down, actually two of the original houses, Garesteth and Darman, were able to broker a bit of a compromise to calm this greater civil war. Ivid I turns out to be quite the lovely ruler, quite tyrannical. He's on the Malachite throne, and this is where kind of the term and the reference to the Malachite throne becomes dark. And so, in today's world, they see it and only remember it in its time of darkness under the rule of the Herzogs of Ivid. And just an example, in 446 CY, Ivid granted an audience to representatives of Irongate, who went to Zelradton, one of the holdings of the Great Northern Kingdom, to air grievances. And it was actually a ruse. The ambassadors were taken, tortured, and executed surely for the pleasure of Overking Ivid's, afternoon, if you will. And so, again, this causes a rise of civil war and violent rebellion. And so the Iron League forms and allies itself with Nyrond in the south, which is down in the area, of course, where the current United Kingdom of Alyssa is. A total of five Overkings rule the Great Kingdom for over another 100 and a half years. A line of tyrants, so much so that the Malachite throne became kind of renamed as the Fiend Seeing Throne, because there was belief that the Ivid Overkings, would summon demons and devils and consort with them. The religion of Hextor, this is where that begins to come into play during the reign of the Ivid Overkings. And again, this is the mid to late and into the 500s CY. The Great Kingdom, again, one last attempt maybe to pull together under the reign of Ivid V, who took over on the throne in 556 CY. Despite being deemed insane or becoming insane, he fended the realm off, or defended the realm from the combined forces of the Golden League, and the civil unrest that took place during the Red Death Plague of 581 CY. Ivid brought the provinces together to try to reestablish the former glory of the Empire of Erdi, and in 583 he launched an attack upon Nyrond, Almor, and the Iron League, but all it did was really spell the death and demise of the Great Kingdom as it was known. Much destruction and death. And the North Province was what was left for the Overking line of Overkings known as Ivid. Let's see here. And it declared independence in 584, trying to pull itself out of the Greyhawk Wars. And, in just a very short time, the empire just kind of collapsed. 586 is really what marks the end of the Great Kingdom. Rivals for the throne. Almor attacks the capital, hearing that Ivid V had died. Rauxus falls prey to some horrible magical conflict that really just laid waste to the whole region around Rauxus for years and years, with distorted magical forces and the like. No real for sure knowledge what happened to Ivid V. And all of the rivals for the Malachite throne. In the north, the Great Kingdom of Northern Erdi was formed by Ivid's cousin, Herzog Grenel, crowned himself an Overking, and just set about trying to get that Great Northern Kingdom of Erdi established, defended, solidified, pulled together. In 587, most of the rest of the Great Kingdom then reforms under the banner of House Darman, and that's when we find them calling themselves the United Kingdom of Alyssa. Again, the effort was led by this scion of House Darman, a prince named Zavenor, was from Kalstrand. He was able to pull together the remaining surviving provinces with his house sitting atop the seat of power. And within 4 years, the United Kingdom of Alyssa had established borders. And now their real most active, in terms of war and violence and subterfuge, their most active enemy now, of course, is the North Kingdom. In 590, CY Overking Zavenor directed his kinsmen, assisted by the priesthood of Zilkus, to create a new path for this great trade road, the Windmarch. Kind of an east-west from Chathold down to Nulbish and Pontilver, and then all the way up to Eastfair, which is up near the Adry Forest, the Great Northern Province. Just, again, trying to retie trade relationships in the region to reignite the economy. And so this new Wind March of Alyssa is one of the latest and most important initiatives of Overking Zavenor in modern times, if you will. And so caravans of merchants have set forth, beginning in 591, migrating, if you will, to trade wares and things all across the you know, the reaches of the United Kingdom of Alyssa. It's an ancient trade road that managed to stay passable during the times of the Great Kingdom, particularly during the dark days of the Ivid overkings. But it took a lot of damage, and there, you know, it needed to be cleared and made safe again from orcs and holdover military units that, you know, maybe are in pockets of quiet places that didn't know the war was over, you know, sort of thing. Brigands and bandits, things of that nature, you know. Over King Zavanner had to make all of that passable and safe and guarded again, and has done such. You know, so slowly but surely, the United Kingdom of Alyssa is working on making itself relevant and meaningful on the basis of economy, trade, mercantilism. The main issues now, there are some border disputes all around Alyssa. Again, when you have this collection of nobles who have ancient, you know, side agreements, you know, with Nyrond or the Iron League or, you know, the Iron Hills or Almor, Anwal, you know, and then the grief that they still have up in the North Kingdom. And of course, never ending meddling from the Scarlet Brotherhood, who seem to see this area as rife with opportunity for them to gain a foothold and influence over valuable trade and so forth. So, in fact, there's been this faction or secret society, if you will, called the Midnight Darkness, and they are setting about infiltrating kingdoms. And it is assumed that most of the kingdoms in the Eastern Flaness have probably been infiltrated or are currently infiltrated by one or more members of this Midnight Darkness or Scarlet Brotherhood, trying to bring down the noble culture of Erdi. So it's organized, it's together, but it's still a land of strife and suspicion, political intrigue, galore, backstabbing, double dealing, spying, smuggling, you name it. So as a DM, this is a delicious part of the world to run a campaign. And so I've actually chosen to do so. We have a game that runs occasionally. It's not a regular game, called How Comes the Darkness. We play, which is just two players, Carl and Chris, join me on the occasional Sunday. And they are down in the Principality of Nehri near the Menowood Forest. To kick things off, I thought, well, let's go super classic D&D. And I dropped the keep on the Borderlands in the area east of Thurbrook, which is sort of a outpost fort, if you will, small town. And then the keep sort of keeps the peace between, you know, things that may come out of the vast swamp or out of the Menowood or out of the highlands, or perhaps, you know, even issues with the Scarlet Brotherhood, that keeps that southeastern border, the barony of Derevent, safe. And so we're playing down there. And of course, there's concern about the Scarlet Brotherhood and what they may be up to. So that's what we're having some fun with there. But the overall, the United Kingdom of Alyssa represents an excellent opportunity as a DM to, you know, you could take any one of those principalities and dive in and create for yourself a wonderful campaign with obviously rich history that you can have your heroes, you know, going up against the noble houses or working, you know, for a noble house against another noble house or maybe working for the Overking Zavanner himself to you know, break some sort of a spy ring or assassin's ring that threatens, you know, the kingdom. But a really great opportunity for some awesome D&D. All of the geographies are represented. You know, there's hills, mountain ranges, plains, very fecund and fertile valleys. You know, as this land slowly recovers from all of the war and conflict over the centuries. But again, it's surrounded by suspicion. You know, Nyrond, Almor, Anwal, Wamtham, and then, of course, the Great Northern Kingdom, all very suspicious of the designs of the noble houses of Alyssa. Even, you know, Ral Astra is now its own city-state through the Solnor Compact. And so there's going to be suspicion, you know, because Rel Astra was part of the original Erdi, you know, great Erdi kingdom of yore. So no end of intrigue and adventure here. So if you haven't, you know, explored the United Kingdom of Alyssa, check it out. It's there's a lot to it. There's a lot of great history. Again, I pulled my information for today's episode from the LGG, Living Greyhawk Gazetteer, to just get you a look into, you know, the various, you know, high level view, the various principalities, the history of this area. So, my goodness, 44 minutes goes by quickly when you're dug into some cool lore. So that's going to about do it for today's episode. I do want to make a little plug. This is going to be dropping on February 12. By the time you're listening to this, and upcoming in the end of March is the GaryCon gaming convention up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. I just want to give a little plug. I've decided to do something a little daring for me. I've taken the plunge and I've signed up to Dungeon Master 4 events at GaryCon. I'm going to be running Len Lakofka's adventure, The Lighthouse. It runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday mornings every day at 9 a.m. So if you are planning on going to GaryCon and are looking for a game, would love to meet up with you at GaryCon. Sign up for the game I'm running, The Lighthouse by Len Lakofka. It's a classic adventure that's actually was among his effects after his passing. He was very close friends with Lord Kazumba, J. Scott, and Anna B. Meyer, and he kind of, I think, maybe bequeathed, if you will, his notes and collections in his writings from over the years. Of course, you know, Len goes way back to TSR days in Lake Geneva, early days of Dungeons & Dragons. And so, you know, since we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of D&D at GaryCon with Founders and Legends the weekend before, and then the weekend of GaryCon in late March, and it's like right around the 21st, 22nd of March, I thought it'd be fun to try and run a classic adventure. So some friends of ours from the Greyhawk community got together. Troy Cannibal is his call sign and Twitch. Zarathon Anon, Josh Pop, worked with Anna to help kind of reconstruct or finish this adventure, The Lighthouse. And so I'm going to be running that for 4 days with minis and maps, dry erase, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, if you want to sling some dice with Old Wily Hobbit, I'll be at GaryCon doing that. So a little nervous about that, as the old imposter syndrome likes to sneak in, but I thought, why not, you know, why not give it a try? So at any rate, hopefully we'll have Mateus back at the mic soon, so you don't have to have like 45 minutes of me going on and on. But again, he's at home enjoying his new daughter, Sophia, and just getting some well-deserved rest as his plate runneth over, if you will. So on behalf of Mateus and myself, thank you for joining us for another episode of Greycast. Be kind, be safe out there to one and all, and we'll see you on the pathways and tradeways of Greyhawk as we learn about this wonderful setting of ours.
You've been listening to the Greycast podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Mateus and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. You can find our podcast on Spotify and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.